Hi there, I'm Dr. Mirdalis Diaz-Ramirez, and this is the Design Your Physician Life podcast. Welcome to this episode brought to you by our Maxillary Mastermind, an exclusive mastermind for physician entrepreneurs. Today, we have a wonderful guest, Dr. Corey Fawcett from Financial Success MD. We have a great conversation with Dr. Fawcett about the specifics of designing your physician life as a locum tenens. Are you ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Design Your Physician Life podcast, where you will get excited about being a physician, learn the tools that can help boost your success, and great tips from successful doctors. Join us to unlock the keys to an amazing physician life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Mirdalis Diaz-Ramirez.
So guys, we're super excited. Today we have Dr. Corey Fawcett. He's actually one of our coaches for our Maxillary Mastermind, and he's what he calls himself a repurposed surgeon who retired from rewarding medical career and surgery at the age of 54 due to his real estate cash flow from 55 rental units. He's the author of the award-winning and best-selling Doctor Guidebook series that helps doctors live a better life through improving work conditions, controlling finances, and eliminating debt. He blogs at Financial Success MD. He's a certified high-performance coach, keynote speaker, real estate coach, and offers a financial makeover program. He also has two evergreen online courses, one for automating your real estate investing and another one for thriving as a locum tenens. So thank you very much and welcome, Dr. Corey Fawcett.
Thanks for having me on here. You know, I sound really good after you said all that stuff. It was like, is that really me?
I'm telling you, we only bring the best. What can I say? And you're one of them.
Thanks for inviting me.
But there was some time ago when you were not that so experienced, right? Before going to medical school a few years ago, right?
Yeah, there was a time. Yes.
Tell us about the first times that you thought about becoming a physician. What happened there?
You know, this dates all the way back to when I was a little kid. The first time I remember thinking about what I wanted to do for a living was when I was watching the Christmas Story, When the Grinch Stole Christmas. And I thought, you know, that mean old Grinch would be a whole lot nicer if he just had his teeth fixed. So I should become a dentist, so I can fix the Grinch's teeth and he will be nicer. So for years then after that little episode, I wanted to be a dentist. And then later on, when I got my first set of glasses and it kind of changed my life, suddenly I could see, I wanted to be an ophthalmologist. And I kind of wanted that all the way through medical school. So by the time I got to medical school, that's what I wanted to do, was to be an ophthalmologist. I got through medical school and almost quit because at our medical school in Oregon, we did 2 years clinical or 2 years of book work and then 2 years of clinical work.
And Oregon, you're talking about OHSU?
Yes. Oregon Health Sciences. I started my clinical work after 3 years of hard work in medical school. And the first three rotations I took, I absolutely hated that. The first one was pediatrics. None of those kids could tell me anything about what was wrong. And I was sick constantly. Every single kid that came in gave me whatever they had. And so I was miserable for the whole time. Then I switched to OBGYN. I did not like that at all. I spent three more months doing something else I didn't like. And then the next one was internal medicine at the VA hospital. And these guys just kept coming back with the same thing. It's like, I saw you last week for this and you didn't do what I told you and you still got it. It's like those people with diabetes, they just keep coming back. The diabetes doesn't go away. And this is now 9 months into my clinical rotation. I'm thinking, I don't like this medicine stuff. This is not what I signed up for. And I just, at the same time, I just recorded a music album of original music and had published that. And so I was weighing quitting medicine and becoming full-time a musician at that point.
What type of music?
It was kind of combination pop and country. I think
any instruments.
I played the guitar and the piano and the bass on the album. And here I was with this dilemma. All my life, I wanted to be in medicine somewhere. And now I'm thinking of quitting at the end of my third year. And I met with a professional musician and we talked about it. And it was funny that he said, well, don't switch to music unless you want to starve for the first 9 years of your career. And I said, well, what do you think happens to doctors? It's the same. And he said, give it a little more time before you make the jump.
And so that was your mentor, right?
No,
that was basically a mentor. He told you stay in medicine.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
I called a professional musician and we set up a lunch meeting to just talk about me switching to music. He was in Portland. And then the next rotation changed my life. The next rotation was general surgery with Dr. Donald Trunke. And I loved everything about it. It was perfect for me. I mean, we were fixing stuff. That was what I wanted to do way back in the beginning.
You wanted to fix teeth. You wanted to fix eyes. Yeah. And that's what you wanted to do.
If I could just fix the Grinch's teeth, all would be well, right?
Can I tell you that I also met Dr. Trunke? I did my residency there yet, which is you too, and fellowship.
Well, he was a great guy, and he basically saved my medical career on that rotation. He was my instructor. He was the chief of the service. And I remember the first day when he's also the head of the whole surgery department. My first day meeting him, he walks into the operating room and we're getting ready to start. And he says, do you know how to put in a Foley? And I said, no. And the nurses were kind of busy. He said, well, let me show you. And he just jumped right in and taught me how to do this. And I was thinking, man, he's the highest ranked guy here. And I am probably the lowest ranked guy here. And he's teaching me one-on-one how to do this. That made a big impact on me. But the ability, I mean, when you take out somebody's appendix, they are never coming back to you with that problem again.
We only have one appendix.
You know? And so that was a turning point for me.
It's amazing, you know, what our rotations
do. I actually got
poor grades.
The rotation before, I actually got a poor grade on, that internal medicine one. Because I was, you know, when you're at the point where you're thinking about quitting what you're doing, you just don't put the effort into it. And then all of a sudden, I was fired up and I got great grades from there on out. And I actually repeated an internal medicine rotation because I didn't put enough effort into that one when I was deciding about leaving medicine. And I went on to become a general surgeon and I loved it. And I had a great career as a general surgeon. And I joined a private practice here in Oregon, about a half hour from my parents' house where I grew up. They're still in that house today and they're in their 80s. And I practiced here for 20 years with this group when I moved here. And then practiced 3 years as a locum as I kind of wound down my practice to retire at age 54. But I consider that I had a great career in general surgery. It was a lot of fun.
That's awesome to hear. You know, did you ever get to the Grinch to fix them something or anything like that? No.
Well, I don't do teeth now, so I am not going to be able to fix the Grinch's teeth anymore. But somebody needs to do that. There's something there, you know. There's an opportunity.
Then we wouldn't have any Grinch then for lessons.
We could probably do without the Grinch, but I do watch him every year, and it brings back memories of that time watching it. I was probably 5 years old when that happened, somewhere in that age range. And the other thing that was really big to me was a book that my grandfather read to me called Dr. Goat. It's a little children's book about a doctor who goes out helping everybody. And then in the end, he gets sick. And then all the people he helped came back and helped him while he was sick. And then he went on his way at the end of the book. And I think that book actually sits on the mantle today at my house as a pivotal piece of my my history. I think that may have been an influence, and that even predated The Grinch. But that book was, that's even my email, my private email account is Dr. Goat.
That's it. Don't say anymore.
But
it's amazing to hear these stories. Really, it starts with those moments that really inspire you, that really touch you. And we become doctors because we really want to make a difference. We really want to change the world somehow. And finding our place in the world, it's always a discovery process, and it's so individual to each of us. But I'm yet to hear about any physician who wasn't really inspired by moments like this and really touched them, and that's what they wanted to do, to help others. But in your case, you had some evolution, right? Like you say, like you're a repurposed surgeon. And mm-hmm. now you teach others about two things. One is the locum tenens, which we're going to talk to about it in a little while. And then the other one is the real estate investment. Which one came first?
The real estate investing was something that happened a long time before I became a locums doctor. But I think I developed the locums course before I developed the real estate course. But I started my real estate investing way back, you might say, with my grandmother when I was a kid, because my grandmother was a real estate investor and my grandfather. And they would save up a little money, buy a house, rent it out, and save up a little money, buy a house, rent it out. And those houses that they bought back in the 60s took care of her when she was retired. And I was their fix-it man. I was their oldest grandson, and when they were going to fix something and needed some help, they would bring me. And so I got to work on them. And so I got to learn as a teenager how to fix lots of stuff at a house. It was a lot of fun, re-roofing, putting in new floors, putting in new tile, you know, replacing a toilet. I learned all these skills as a teenager. And then I always knew someday I was going to get into real estate. And that happened when I first started my practice. I started my practice with only about $5,000 of debt. And when I came out of residency. And then
it's a little different.
Yeah.
From these days.
That's a great story all by itself. And then within a year or two, I was over $500,000 in debt. So I had no debt when I started. And then everybody comes out of the woodwork to loan a new doctor money. And they did. And I borrowed a lot of money. And so my wife and I decided to get out of debt. I even wrote a book of that and told my whole story of how that came about.
I have a question before you go on the book. So when you come out of medical school, which is what many of us do, and I'm wondering if this is what happened at that point, it's like you feel like you've worked so hard and you're ready to like give yourself a prize, right? You give yourself the prize, a big house, a big car, mm-hmm. and all these things that you think that you need because to prove yourself that you've made it somehow. Is that what happened to you?
Somewhat. Yes, there were some things that I bought that I don't think anything was ever particularly extravagant, but they just kept adding up. And a motorhome, the cars, the house, the practice, the building that the practice was in. So some of that money, we were $500,000 in debt, was actually investment debt. And some of it was consumer debt, but all of it weighed on my shoulders. And so I just kind of got into the, well, I got all this money. It's kind of like when I was a resident and I went to get a new car, I said to myself, hey, I can afford the payments of a Mercedes now. And that's a good car that a doctor should drive. So I went out to buy a Mercedes as a resident. And boy, that was a nice car. I test drove that car compared to the old car I drove into the lot with, and that brand new Mercedes. It was an absolutely beautiful car. And I told the guy, let me think about it. And I got home and I thought about it over the night, and I realized all of the other things that we could have done with the money that that car costs approximately an entire year's salary. And I was thinking I could afford the payments. And that was when I first realized there was a difference between saying you can afford the payments of something than you can afford to buy the something. Because I couldn't afford to just write them a check and buy the car. And so I ended up not buying that Mercedes, and I bought a used Ford Taurus at that time for a third of the price of the Mercedes. And I'm glad I did. And I never ended up owning that Mercedes in my life. But I was really drawn to the doctor car and the fact that I could now afford those easy monthly payments. And that would have probably made it so that I had more debt when I came out of residency. But what we had done during our residency was we decided to live on only half of our income and then save or invest the rest. And so I used that extra half to pay off my student loans and to save some money. So we actually came into town with the actual money to make a down payment on a house and to furnish the house and to get started. And then we borrowed from there. Of course, I made a crucial mistake that all you new guys coming out need to know. I figured I needed to, I started work like August 1st. So I figured I just needed my money to last till August 1st. And so it did. We were running out of money just as I'm starting, because we took the summer off in between them. And just as I'm getting ready to start and I'm out of money, I realize I get paid at the end of the month. So I'm totally out of money now. And my paycheck isn't for a month. And so that was the first time we actually put money onto a credit card that we didn't actually have the money to pay it when the bill came. And then it took us a few months to catch back up. But when you start your job, you don't often get paid right away. The pay comes later. And so I made that mistake of calculating how long my money needed to last. So we bought some stuff we probably shouldn't have purchased yet because our money should have had to last one more month. And that's an important calculation. So watch out for that when you start a new job. They don't pay you when you walk in the door.
Any transition, like when you open a clinic, right? You have to wait for, if you're insurance based, you have to wait for those insurances first to be credentialed. And there's a series of steps that happens there. And then after that, the money starts coming.
There's a long delay when you start in practice. And maybe that's why people want to become an employee, is because you get a paycheck right away and the employer has to take that delay in when that comes in. But I actually, in my book, Starting Your Practice Right, I actually took a person who changed jobs. He moved from one town to another as a doctor, and we added up what it cost him to do that. And it was over $170,000 to swap jobs.
Yeah, and as physicians, we swap jobs an average of over like 2 to 3 times in our lives.
And it's very expensive when you do that too. Yeah. And you don't realize there's not only is expensive, but when you change jobs, there's a time delay because you have to get credentialed at multiple levels. And so you can't just quit a job today and just go work somewhere else. There's a long time gap that those people have to get everything ready before you can actually practice medicine. And this guy actually missed that because he didn't time it right. And he left one job and the other one wasn't ready yet. And he had to wait 2 months longer than he thought before he could start earning his income because all of the credentialing wasn't finished yet.
Things that we have to add up. Like when we're doing these plans, that's why we say design your physician life. Like you have to design and plan for all these changes. And we don't think about it. We just say, okay, you know, we're going to go through medical school. These are the steps. And then you keep going, but you're not really acquiring financial knowledge, financial education. So let's move into the locum tenens part. given that, you know, we're talking about changing jobs and this topic, what happens first? What is locum tenens? And number two, how do you get a locum tenens job?
So locum tenens is basically, if everybody's familiar with what a substitute teacher is, and that's kind of what locum tenens, it's a substitute doctor. You're going to come in and you're going to fill in for a need for just a short period of time. It could be real short. It could be pretty long, depending on what their need is. For me, I was using locum tenens to wind down my practice life. So I was trying to work part-time. And so I didn't take any jobs that were longer than 2 weeks in length. They just need some coverage. The bulk of what I did was come in and give a lone general surgeon a week off. He's the only guy in town. He's on call all the time. He needs breaks. And I would just come in and say, I'll take your beeper for the week. And I just kind of took over for him and let him have a break. Sometimes you're filling in for somebody with a maternity leave. I did one of those, but I only filled in for a spot where the actual locums person who was filling in for the maternity needed 2 weeks off in the middle of their filling in for somebody. And so I filled in for the fill-inner and just did the 2 weeks and let that person get off until the maternity leave was over. So it's a chance for you to go fill in for somebody. Because of that fill-in possibility, you have some really cool options here. You can design exactly what you want to do, so you only fill in for what you want. So, for example, I didn't take a three-month maternity leave job. I didn't want to go somewhere and work 3 months. I was just working little pieces. And so you can choose that. I do endoscopies. And so I wanted to go someplace where they would do endoscopies. So I could still do that. Some places do, some places don't. I wanted my wife with me when we went there. And so I didn't take any jobs that my wife couldn't be there with me. So you can design some really cool things. And when you are searching for what you want to do or where you want to live, this is a great way to test drive places. You want to live in Phoenix, Arizona, but you're not sure what the summers are like and whether you really tolerate that, then do a locums job in Phoenix in July and see what it's like. You get a chance to get paid to test drive an area or a group. So a lot of groups, they lost a physician and they're one short and they're looking for a new physician. And you go in and fill in for them. If you really like the job, you like the town, you like these people, and they like you, they may just take you and you just got a job and you got to test drive it first. So there's a lot of really cool things you can do in the locums world in order to test drive things or just have fun. And for my wife and I, we were just wanting to travel around on somebody else's dime and test out, you know, new places. We were thinking about where do we want to live, because I had retired from my practice so we could live anywhere. And we were kind of testing that out. And so it's a great way to test the waters. Many people just think about it as just a way to earn some extra money. But there's a lot more to doing locums than that.
I've seen quite a few people these days who become financially independent, like through real estate, like you have, and other ways where they can live a nomad life. And they decide to keep up their skills as physicians using locum tenens. So these are people who can do anything that they want, but they still feel that they can service as a physician, and they use locum tenens that way as well. I have a question regarding specifically when you were working as a locum tenens, did you have your locum tenens company? Did you go through other locum tenens companies? What type of insurance you had as a locum tenens? Did the company provide that for you? Was that something that you did on your own? And in terms of credentialing, so it's three things. It's who did these locum tenens contracts for you, you or somebody else, the insurance, malpractice insurance, and then the credentialing, specific credentialing that you like, where you still needed to be connected to Medicare to be able to do these jobs or to insurances, or if you're a locum tenens, can you just come and then they take care of the rest because it's a locum tenens position?
So let's start with the first one. How did I get the jobs? Who did I work through? So the way I actually started is kind of unique. I had already told my partners that I was going to retire from the practice. And the reason I was going to retire is they wouldn't let me work part-time. The way our contract was set up, part-time work doesn't really work out right. And it had to do with how we handled overhead. And if you went to part-time, but your overhead doesn't come down with it, you could end up owing them money to work because your income drops, but your expenses are fixed. And so they weren't willing to change that. So I had to retire from the practice and then kind of do locums in order to work part-time. And the way I launched that was in October. I was going to retire December 31st. In October, my wife and I were going to Europe for a month to take a vacation. And I wrote a letter. I decided I wanted to work in small critical access hospitals and give the lone surgeon a chance to take a break. That's what I wanted to do in locums. And that's how I wanted to wind down my practice. So I sent a letter to every hospital in Oregon and Idaho, the two states that I wanted to work in, and I had a license. I also had a license in California, didn't really want to work in California. So Oregon and Idaho, I sent a letter to every one of those guys and basically told them I'm going to be gone for a few weeks. If you have an interest in needing me, let me know and I'll get back to you when I get back. And I didn't know what was going to happen. So I went directly to the hospitals, and when I got home, I had responses that was more work than I could possibly do. There was more need for this than I had thought there was. And so I worked directly with the hospitals. Now, I also let a couple of locums companies know I was looking because I didn't know what was going to work out. And so I did two assignments through local locums companies, and all the rest of my assignments, I dealt directly with the hospital, and I cut the locums company out of the loop. They take a huge amount of profit to do what they do, and you could have that profit or part of it anyway yourself. So for the bulk of them, I just contracted directly with the hospitals. About my insurance, when I worked through the locums company provided my insurance for the time that I would be working, which was basically an occurrence type insurance. If I was working that 1 week, anytime something came up from a malpractice from that week, they would be covering it. And so the locums companies did that. When I worked directly with the hospitals provided my malpractice insurance. I held on to my original malpractice insurance as well and used it because I still, my partners actually hired me back as a locums doctor to take call 1 weekend a month. They kind of figured, well, if you're going to do locums anyway, why don't you do locums for us? And why don't you just take call once a month for 1 weekend a month so that their call level didn't drop down. And so I kept my insurance for that, which also allowed me to work in a clinic that I designed and put together at the Gospel Rescue Mission, where I would go to that clinic once a week and see the homeless people that were at the mission for any medical problems they had. So they didn't have to go to the emergency room. And so my malpractice insurance was covering that. A couple of years later, into my 3 years of this, my main group didn't need me anymore to cover call. The thing that really made that happen was the hospital started paying them to take calls. So all of a sudden, they didn't need me to take that call. They would go ahead and take it. And so when they didn't need me anymore, I dropped that insurance and I just used the insurance from the companies at the hospitals where I was working. And so insurance wasn't really a problem in there. When you're a locums doctor, somebody else, that's part of the package. Somebody else is providing you the insurance. As far as credentialing, I stuck to states that I already had a license in. So I didn't need to go through another licensing process. except that one of the locums companies got me a job in Washington. I didn't have a license in Washington. So they did the licensing process for me and got that all done. I got a Washington license to do that locums job. And it was the only time I ever worked in Washington was that 1 2-week job. And I had the license. They kept it for a couple of years and then they quit paying for it. And then that one expired. But if you jump all over the country, every time you jump somewhere, you're going to need a new state license, which causes some extra grief getting another license, which means another license renewal that's happening periodically. And then when it comes to the hospital credentials, I have a box that's full of all of my credentialing information. And that little box goes with me to every assignment. You could put all that information also in an electronic file, but I had a hard file that I carried around with me that had all of my credentialing information. So when I went to a new hospital, all of my credentialing information was right there at my fingertips. Whatever they wanted, I could just pull it through and here it is, here it is, here it is, here it is. So it made credentialing pretty easy. And that was pretty painless to do when you kept everything all together. If you're doing your very first locums time, I can tell you your credentialing is going to be painful because you don't have all of the pieces all put together that you're going to need. You know, they want a copy of your diploma. You know, frankly, the copy of my diploma when I started was hanging on the wall in my office. You know, and I had to take it off and get a copy made, you know. So the first time was painful. And then if you put all that stuff together in one file that you needed to credential that time, you will have it at your fingertips for every time you credential again. Now, Oregon, I did most of my work in Oregon, and Oregon has a system, a centralized credentialing system. So if you get yourself credentialed with that group, all you need to do is tell them the new hospital you're at, and they just pass your credentials off to the new hospital. So every time I worked in Oregon, re-credentialing with something was super easy. That one company took take care of everything in Oregon. Another problem was the DEA. They only allow you to be credentialed in one state. And so when I would work in Idaho, I had to change my DEA address to the Idaho office I was going to be at. And then I would have a new Idaho DEA. And then when I left Idaho and I'm working in Oregon, I had to change my DEA back to Oregon. And so that was a little bit of a pain. The DEA should fix that. You should have one DEA credential and it should work in every state. It's a federal program. You shouldn't have to redo it in every state. You should be enough. It should be you who's being credentialed, not your address.
I don't know. Maybe so. That means less money. So maybe less money is not a good idea, right? For the well, DA.
Everybody wants more money, but also it means a lot more work. But you can do it online. You just go online, click a few buttons, and you've transferred your DEA to a different address, which is really a silly system they have there. Much of the government stuff is silly. They could do it a lot better and simpler.
So then what about the insurance, like particular insurance? Like when you are working locum tenens and, you know, like you're changing state to state and everything, do you really have to still be under Medicare, registered with Medicare? Do you have to be registered with each insurance or because of your locum tenens and that's filled out, that claim is filled out like that, will the hospital just be responsible for that? Or, you know, because I've seen somewhere where it says you don't have to be a Medicare provider to be able to do locum tenens. How does that work?
I was a Medicare provider and I never heard that come up in anything. You know, you're talking about a different kind of insurance here. You're talking about the insurance that pays the bills, right?
Exactly. So we talked about the malpractice insurance. Now let's talk about the insurances that pay the bills for these patients that you see under a short-term assignment, like a locum tenens.
Yeah? Right. Locum tenens. When it never came up because when I was being credentialed by the hospital, they at the same time were credentialing me for all of the insurances that they deal with. And so they took care of that. And the same thing happened when I worked with the locum tenens company. It was just part of the package of getting you credentialed. They got you credentialed, not just at the hospital. So you needed the state license, you needed the hospital credentials to work in the hospital. And then you also needed every insurance company that the hospital works with had to credential you. And so they just took care of all of that stuff. And they would just ask me for a piece of data or something. And part of that was, you know, the every malpractice claim I've ever been involved in, you know, what were the details? And if you have those already set, then you can just send them a copy. You know, you had all that ready the first time you did it. Now it's all available, you know, everything you need. And then the next time you would go, they would just ask you for that same stuff. You just send it to them. And then they take care of all the credentialing. So I wasn't required to go to each of those insurance companies and credential myself with them. The hospital has lots of physicians that they own, and they do this all the time. And they had a whole team and they just took care of it.
But many times it takes 3 months for credentialing. So for a locum tenens assignment, do they have like an expedited request or something like that that you know of?
Almost all of my locums assignments were made well in advance, so that 3 month delay doesn't count. Now, there are occasions when they needed somebody really quick. And it's funny that, you know, it takes us 3 minutes to get you credentialed unless we need you in a hurry, and then we can do it in a month. You know, they can do it faster, but it's a pain on their end to sidestep all the normal things. So, for instance, getting hospital credentials, first the credentialing person, there's a person who gets everything together. They get it all together. Then they give it to the credentials committee, which meets monthly. So you have to wait till their meeting happens. And then they have a meeting, and then if they approve everything, then they pass it on to the board, who meets monthly, and you have to wait till their meeting. And so that the 3 month delay has a lot of that involved in it. And you can see how you could sidestep those and get it to the board quicker if you really had to. So in urgent need on their end, they can make it happen faster. But for most part, what I did was, there was two things that helped me with this. Number one is I did it well in advance. So most of these assignments are set up several months in advance. So there's plenty of time to get all that ready and for you to make a schedule. But the other thing was to repeat places that you were at. So if I'm working with a lone surgeon in this town, he's the only guy there, this isn't the only week he needs off. He's going to need vacation repeatedly. And so once I'm credentialed at that hospital, it's very easy for me to come back and work again 4 months later for them, and then another 4 months for the same people. So if you can repeat the places that you go to, saves you a lot of trouble. If you're going to a new place every time, you always start over from scratch. The other thing that was really helpful is some hospitals are in the same system. So one system owns 12 hospitals. So if you get credentialed in one hospital, it's really easy for you to work in one of their other hospitals. And so if you can work out places where you're double dipping, you're staying within a system when you do your jobs, then it simplifies your credentialing process immensely. That was really great. And one of the things that helped me the most was one of those systems that had multiple hospitals. They had two of these small critical access hospitals that had one surgeon and they needed help. And they just came to me and says, listen, why don't you stop going around to all these other people and helping them? I mean, you just keep coming back and helping us. We'd like you 1 week every month. And I'd like you 1 week at our other hospital every month. So you give our doctor a break every month. And so I started working now just in one hospital system at two of their hospitals, 1 week
that's
a month.
That's a part-time job there. It's not already.
Just that one thing.
That turns out to be a part-time job.
Yeah, it felt like locums, but since I'm always going back to the same place, my locums job became a real part-time job. And along with that fact, the fact that I was going to come back every month I now asked them to stop putting me up in the hotel. They would put me up in a hotel to stay for 1 week. But I wanted an actual apartment that they paid for and I had, so I could put my stuff in it and I would just come back to my apartment and all my stuff is there. And then I'd leave and I'd come back to the apartment every month. And so they said yes. And so I got a new home in two places. So I had my original home in Oregon and then these two homes in Oregon. One was on the coast. And so I would live at one home for 2 weeks, one home for 1 week, and on the coast for a week. It was a beautiful life at that point, because now I wasn't recredentialing anywhere. I was just going to this. I just booking my time with them and just going to the same places all the time. And what an easy locum's job that was. That,
well,
that
let's
turned
talk
out nice.
About if we were going to if you were going to find a locum jobs today to give three specific tips to our listeners about locum jobs, which would those three tips be?
OK, the first tip would be you decide ahead of time what you want to do. What do you want your ideal job to look like? Okay. Because that will help you a lot in saying yes or no to the upcoming offers that come out and you give them to those. I would send a letter like I did to every single hospital that fits your criteria that you want, that you already have a license to. So you don't need a new license. And right now there's a lot of need for doctors. And so you're going to get yeses from that and find the yeses that you like. And I would put my name in with probably three locums companies and have them looking for you as well. So you've got kind of a multiple prong approach here. The one that's the nicest is to work directly with the other hospitals. And if you do those in the states you already have a license, and many doctors have two licenses, the place they did their residency and the place they live now. And so a lot of doctors have two states right off the bat that they can work in without having to get another license. And so I would start there. But I think the most important thing is sending out those letters to everybody who fits what you'd like to do. For instance, when I sent out my letters, I didn't want to work in a big city with a big trauma center. I didn't want to be doing, I'm trying to cut back my practice and retire. I do not want to work in a trauma center. So I went to only the critical access hospitals. I didn't send a letter to anybody in Portland or Salem or Eugene, the big cities. I didn't go there. I went to the little towns. But you may love trauma and you as a general surgeon and you want to work there. So you would only send them to trauma centers. But find out what you really want to do. There's nothing worse than going to a locums assignment and being miserable the whole time because they're making you do stuff you don't want to do. Figure out what you want and only go after those. One really good example is I told a couple of locums companies to find me jobs. And I said, my wife has to go with me. There are some locums assignment where a spouse is not allowed to come. Okay. And he called me one day about this great job on an island in the Pacific. And my mouth is watering already. All right. You know, I'm trying to be retired. I'm going to this great job in the Pacific, but your wife can't come because it's a military base and you would be housed with the same sex group in your building, you know, and you can't take your spouse. And it was like, I told the recruiter, you know, didn't I tell you that it had to be with my spouse? And he says, yeah, but this is such a great job. I said, don't call me if the job you have doesn't match the things I wanted out of the job. This is important to me. So make the job the way you want it to be. And there are a lot of variables about how you do your specific profession. So let's say you're an internal medicine doctor. Are you going to cover for an internal medicine practice or are you going to be a hospitalist? Those are very different in how they work. And so is there particular kinds of things, like maybe you're an internal medicine doctor who also does endoscopy? Do you want to go someplace where you can do the endoscopy also? Most places might not have that. And so are you a family practice doctor who wants to deliver babies? Then only go to places where that will be a possibility, because not all the family practice doctors deliver babies. And so you can pick and choose what you want and design the locum's job that you will be happy with, and just go for those. There's plenty of locum's jobs out there. Go for the one you like.
Those are great tips. That's awesome. You know, you can truly design your physician life, design your locum's life, right?
You're in charge. You know, I keep telling people when I'm coaching people and they say, you know, I'm having this problem. And I always say to them, but aren't you the boss? Why aren't you fixing it? And they never thought of that. They just don't think of themselves as the boss of that office. And when there's a problem there, they just say, you know, I'm just going to have to deal with this problem, instead of saying, wait a minute, you are the ranking person here. You are the boss. You fix it. Make it the way you want. You have the power to do that. Even if you're an employed physician, you have the power to mold what you do. And the most power is before you take the job, because they want you, they will agree to something that you want to get you there. But once they got you, it's harder to change your job. So make sure that when you're getting it, you're getting what you want, you know, so.
And it's in writing, right? Whatever you want, things that are important, everything in writing. No, don't believe any promises. Everything needs to be on writing. Otherwise, it didn't happen, right?
If they said they were going to give you something and they don't put it in the contract, then you say, wait a minute, you said this was going to happen. Let's get that in the contract.
And you don't sign until it's in.
Once you sign the contract, you lose power. You have power as long as they want you and don't have you. You have power for negotiating. And every single thing in that contract is negotiable, even if they tell you it's not negotiable. There's no such thing as a not negotiable part of a contract. Everything is negotiable. They'll tell you stuff like, no, this is our standard contract, and everybody signs it. There's also no such thing as a standard contract. That's just something they made up for them, because it's easy for them to make everybody sign the same contract. Everything's negotiable. If you don't like something that's in that contract, don't sign it.
And if you have no idea what a contract says, get a lawyer. And we always recommend that you get a lawyer for any contract that you sign, so that they are the experts and they're on your side to take care of you.
That contract, a lot of people look at the contract and they think, you know, I don't want to pay $500 for a lawyer to look it over. But if you think about it, if you're signing, let's say you're an orthopedic surgeon and you're going to sign a contract for $500,000 a year, okay? If your career is 20 years long, that's a $10 million contract. You don't think $500 for a lawyer to look over a $10 million contract is appropriate? We just don't give the right value to that contract when we're given the contract. It's worth a lot of money to you and a lot of money to them. And the thing is their lawyer looked at it. In fact, their lawyer designed the contract in their favor. So you want to be sure that you have your lawyer look at it so that they can pick out things that you might not have realized are in their favor, the way it's worded. So yes, have somebody look it over with you and never sign it until it says everything that you want. I'll tell you an interesting thing about power. You have power. As a locums doc, I'm an employee, right? They're hiring me to do this one job. And I signed a contract that said exactly what we agreed on. They came back a month later and said, and it had to do with how I was going to get paid. They came back a month later and says, our attorneys have said we can't do it the way the contract says it, that that's not legal. We have to reword this and figure out a different way. And he guarantees me, I'm going to still pay you the money. We just got to figure out a different way to word it so that it's legal. The way we worded it doesn't work. I said, okay, fine, get it worked out. Month goes by. I said, so what's happening with the contract? Oh, we're working on that. Month goes by, another month, 6 months later, and I'm going to his place every every week, 1 week a month. Okay. Every time I come back, I say, so what's the deal with the contract? Well, so the pay I'm supposed to be getting, I haven't gotten yet. And it's 6 months behind. It had to do with how they were paying for me to have an apartment. That was the way they didn't word it so that it worked right. And so finally, 6 months along the line, I said, listen, I've been very nice. I've been very patient. I've given you 6 months to take care of this problem, but my patience is running thin. And I just got an offer for a really great job in Hawaii. And I would love to take my wife to Hawaii. So if you don't have the contract taken care of by the end of this month, I'm going to Hawaii and I won't be working here anymore. I'm going to do that one. He said, oh no, you tell Hawaii, no, we're going to, you know, we want you here. I said, you've said that before. I'm not going to tell them no until I have a signed contract. And I walked. And within 72 hours, it was all taken care of. I had the power to force their hand and hadn't used it until finally I said, and so a lot of doctors wouldn't think they had the power to make these guys do anything. But you do, because they need your help. They need you in the clinic there. They need you in the hospital. They need you in the operating room. They need you to make their money. You have more power than you think you do. Use it.
So, Dr. Fawcett, if people want to find you, where do they find you to learn more about locum tenens and all the things that you teach our physicians, from real estate to opening your office and all these wonderful teachings? Where can we go and find you?
My website is financialsuccessmd.com. If you just Googled my name or you Googled financialsuccessmd.com, you're going to find all kinds of stuff about me. But that will get you to my website, which has got a link that can get you to my other places on social media, you know, Twitter and Instagram and things like that. But go to the website, financialsuccessmd.com, and you can get all of the resources available. There's a free blog. I got an article every week about something in medicine that'll make your life better. And it'll probably change your life to get to read all of those.
Well, thank you very much for being here with us. It's been an honor. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, your time, your knowledge, and we hope to see you soon.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun talking with you.
Thanks. Well, guys, that's it for today. Stay tuned for more of our Design Your Physician Life podcast, which was brought to you today by our Maxillary Mastermind, an exclusive mastermind for physician entrepreneurs. We will continue to bring you useful resources to develop your physician entrepreneur life like we did today with the experienced Dr. Corey Fawcett from Financial Success MD. If you want to find him, go to financialsuccessmd.com. Thank you for joining us. We hope you had a great time as we did. Stay in touch with us. Visit our website, www.maxallure.com. That is M-A-X-A-L-L-U-R-E. And please don't forget to subscribe, like us, give us 5 stars, and share the love with your friends and family. See you later. Thanks. Bye.
Please remember that Design is not providing specific financial, medical, or career advice. Our only intent is to stimulate your appetite for growth by sharing our experience and those of our speakers, coaches, and guests. Your personal growth and success will be unique to your circumstances and your hard work. We sincerely hope you enjoy the show and look forward to seeing you next week.